You having fun? Just staring from across the room. You've got to strut your stuff, and I'll show you just what to do now. You gotta dance, gotta make your advance, you gotta show you've got guts. I got a move that'll make them swoon, and it's called the two-step strut. Now dance with me.
Coming soon to a theater near you, it's The Equalizers, a weekly podcast where two idiots drop a cinema sibling in the lap of a perfectly content solo film. My name is Mike Nolan. I am joined, as always, by the sequel to my prequel, Madison Jones. Madison Jones, are you in good form?
Hello, Mother.
Hello, Father.
That's definitely the vibe. That's definitely the... I think we're... You're definitely mother. I'm definitely
father. I'm
Jim
Broadbent and you're Fiona Shaw wearing those ridiculous sunglasses. Yeah, that tracks. Yeah.
Also very like what's your name? Fiona Shaw. Mm-hmm. Like very androgynous, like mm-hmm. in this. So like I vibe with that. So
what did you think of The Avengers? Because this is based off a 60s TV show from the UK and it was a weird show to begin with.
Oh,
which they were trying to channel a lot of this into. And that's why we had some of the things such as Sean Connery leading a clandestine meeting of a world weather scientists all wearing enormous furry teddy bear costumes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I thought about this a little bit ago before I jumped on the call mm-hmm. of, like, I think this movie is... because I don't know anything about the show, never mm-hmm. heard of it, never watched it. Like, to me, like, the vibe I was getting from this entire movie was this is the perfect middle ground between James Bond and the Kingsman movies.
You're not wrong.
I don't know if it's trying to be farcical, like, or if it's trying to be, like, a parody of James Bond, but it sometimes is and sometimes isn't, because it is a funny movie. But I don't know if it's like trying to go for like we're making fun of James Bond.
I think the Brosnan era of James Bond definitely informed some of what they did. Because from what I've seen, the show is much more the government being like, hey, Emma Peel and Jonathan Steed, something weird's going on over in Slough. Go look into that. And then it turns out it's like a big kind of like adventure thing. It's a little bit more. Have you ever watched the classic Doctor Who? Like from before, like in the 60s.
Yes.
And stuff. You know how there's that vibe of they kind of show up and then they fuck around for an episode and then one of them gets captured and they fuck around for another episode. That was kind of the vibe of the Avengers show. They'd show up somewhere and be like, huh, something weird's going on here. Some of them would get captured. There'd be some fight scenes. They'd figure it out. I think that this was squarely near the end or just after Pierce Brosnan's James Bond run, which was like known for so much over the top bullshit like this movie had. I think that probably is why it skewed farther that way. You mentioned this is the middle point between James Bond and the Kingsman. It does have James Bond and the guy from The Kingsman. So Ralph Fiennes was the dad in The Kingsman.
Yeah.
Sean Connery was James Bond.
I didn't think about that.
Also, Ralph Fiennes played M in the Daniel Craig era of James Bond. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed it. To me, throughout this entire film, I'm like, oh, Mike loves this movie.
It's fine. It's bad. It's really bad.
The quips between Uma Thurman and Ralph Fiennes are like the shit that like I think you would just get your jollies off of, but like I don't know.
Yes,
like,
there's
maybe
far too much. There's far too many. This is what I said. I think I mentioned this to you. That this is the exact same vibe of when we watched Magorium and we said that it's a person who has a technical grasp of whimsy, even if they are not whimsical. This person had a technical grasp of flirty banter, even if they weren't good at it. And then also they really leaned on the flirty banter.
Well, and that was all it was between them, mm-hmm. like throughout the entire movie. Yeah. Like, even in James Bond, they have conversation, like regular conversations between like the love interest and Bond, you know, like they have like normal conversations without them being like, hey, I want to fuck you.
we'll find and put in a clip here. I can find the clip for you, but we'll find some clip of just the like rapid fire sexual innuendo.
I thought you lived on the edge, Mrs. Peel. Is this as fast as you can go?
Have I trespassed on a male prerogative?
You're a lady of hidden talents, Mrs. Peel. A little more
Flexibility in the wrist?
Over here, by your side.
Ah, I was worried.
How touching, afraid you'd lost me.
No, that you might escape.
Still suspicious?
Just wondering if you had brought me here under false pretenses.
Frankly, I'm amazed. Perhaps I should run away.
I'll have to give chase.
I'll hide. How romantic. Do try.
Well, that's why, to me, like, I... Those scenes, I'm like, are they trying to be funny here, or is this earnest? That's what, like, kind of led me... I'm like, okay, this is really ridiculous that, like, every single one of these scenes are like this between these two people. And I'm like, is this intentionally funny, or is this actually in earnest? Like, they wrote this being like, oh, they're flirting so much right now. They want to jump each other's bones so much. Like, or, and maybe that's how the show was too. Well, like, I don't know.
I don't think so, because Jonathan Steed was noticeably older than Emma Peel. So in the show originally, it was Catherine something. I looked this up. Actually, now I looked it up. Honor Blackman was the actress who was originally the sidekick with Patrick McNee. She quit after she played Pussy Galore in James Bond, Goldfinger. Emma Peel came on and was played by Dame Diana Rigg. She was much younger. She wore the black leather cat suit that we saw and was a much more like gymnastic, kicky, punchy character. I don't think it was romantic. I've not seen the show. Funnily enough, she left the Avengers to play Tracy Drago in On Her Majesty's Secret Service, the James Bond film.
Jesus.
Just for fun, also, Patrick McNee went on to be in A View to a Kill, which was also just one. But
To me, it sounds like the Avengers TV show was like the minor leagues for James Bond. Like, basically, yeah. Just like, this is where you go. This is the training ground for James Bond, future James Bond characters.
To your point, I think there's a little bit of column A, a little column B of, I think they really thought this was sexy. I think they really thought that all this banter was sexual chemistry, and it wasn't. Two, because it's based off of a show like classic Doctor Who, where it's 30 minutes, and usually at the end of it, not a lot happens, somebody gets captured. A little bit more happens, somebody gets captured. And they do that for like 6 episodes. I think they just weren't sure how to put together a 90-minute film of one story without filling it to the brim with innuendos. Like, I think they were like, oh, thank God, this is the time filter we need to get between action scenes.
What if that there was actually legitimate dialogue in the movie, but Uma Thurman and Ralph Fiennes were just really horny for each other?
God.
This was genuinely like flirting between the two of these humans.
I don't know.
That's my headcanon.
Sure. All out.
I liked all of the wacky gadgets and the wacky like fight scenes. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought the actual choreography of a lot of that stuff was cool. I liked the beginning when he's just walking through that fake town. Yeah. When he's walking through that fake town and like he almost like fights a bunch of nuns but decides not to. He's like, no, what? No, they're not part of it.
I knew you'd enjoy, at least like appreciate the movie for how wacky it was with stuff like Sean Connery's plan of like controlling the weather and blackmailing the world for good weather. Like the bear costume scene, I was like, at least Jackson's gonna go, what the fuck is this? And like probably get a laugh out of it, but like
I assume that was, I didn't really understand the bear costume thing between, that's sure. Another thing I'm just like, is this just a joke?
Well,
or like, yeah, is it a reference to the thing?
I think the idea is, because the show was known to be very trippy. It was just for anonymity, okay. I think, and for the bit to be like, whoa, it's so weird and trippy, they picked giant colorful bear furry suits. I don't think that was a reference. I think that was just, they're all illicit. Instead of doing like, oh, you know, tented booths where you can't see the people, what if they're all just in big furry bear suits? So then when Sean Connery kills two of them, it's even more ridiculous. Whatever.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that was the extent of the thought there.
Okay.
Which again, feels like a very us thing to do.
Yes, it does. Yeah. I thought Sean Connery played a very good bad guy. And this, just like a crazy, just a crazy weather psycho. and I don't know. Yeah. Like I said, like I enjoyed all the fight scenes. I enjoyed, The story is ridiculous, but it is the kind of ridiculousness of, like, it's the kind of, the most fun Bond stories are the most ridiculous ones for me. Like, Moonraker is my favorite Bond film, because it's just like, okay, yeah, they go to space and the guy has like a fucking laser.
You're one of the few people who I think would ever say Moonraker is their favorite Bond film.
One, it's a Roger Moore. True. And also, like, well, that's why, like, I don't think anybody, I think Roger Moore is probably people's least favorite Bond. Like, no offense. You don't think so? You think
he's Dalton? Yeah, or George Lazenby, who was only in one movie.
I forgot about that guy. I enjoyed this movie. It was entertaining. Like, sometimes I stopped working and like actually like dove into a scene every once in a while. But it was like, I kind of like very much toned out every single time they were talking to each other. I also don't know why it's called the Avengers at all.
Apocryphally.
I'm sure it has something to do with the TV show.
Yes. The TV show was called the Avengers, and I don't take this as like fact. I haven't looked this up, but they did a sort of biopic or fictionalized version of the creation of Doctor Who around the time of its 50th anniversary. And in that scene, when the guy who was running the BBC pulled in this lady to like, you're going to produce this new show, Doctor Who. He's like, we're also doing this other new show, The Avengers. She's like, what's that? He goes, I don't know, but it sounds awesome. Like, I think possibly they just picked a title that sounded rad and went from there.
Okay.
I don't have any reviews for this movie. I started looking and I wasn't finding anything like useful for us, but I saw a review that sparked an idea in me. So I actually have a new game.
Ooh.
In this film, we have Fiona Shaw, Jim Broadbent, and Ralph Fiennes, all three of whom appeared in the Harry Potter franchise of movies.
Yeah.
They've also been in some other movies. So we're going to play Potter, but Notter. I have three roles here. From other movies, one of them played by Ralph Fiennes, one of them played by Fiona Shaw, one of them played by Jim Broadbent. You just got to tell me who was who.
Okay.
So the three parts are the Prime Minister and Adam Sandler's Pixels, Professor James Moriarty and Will Ferrell's Holmes and Watson, and Madam Gasket and Robots.
Is this a trick? Maybe a trick. I've seen Robots. I used to own Robots because I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that movie. I guess I'll take a risk and say this is, to me, is a risk. Mm-hmm. The risk is maybe the trick is Madam Gasket, Fiona Shaw, or whoever you said it was.
For Robots.
For Robots.
Okay, what about, I'm going to have you give, you have to give me the all three. I'm not going to tell you. Okay. Yes, because at some point, if you get the next one right, you're just going to get all of them right offhand. So
I'm going to say Jim Broadbent was in Pixels.
Okay. And that leaves Ralph Fiennes as Professor Moriarty.
Yes. Oh. Wait. No. I reject this. Because if I remember correctly, the enemy in Robots was sort of like a person doing a voice. So, you know, actually, I'm going to say Ralph Fiennes was Madam Gasket.
Okay.
And then I'm going to say, what was the person's name that I said?
Fiona Shaw.
Fiona Shaw, which was one of the choices, right?
Yes.
Okay. Was Moriarty.
Okay.
In Holmes and Watson.
And that leaves Jim Broadbent then as the Prime Minister in Pixels.
I'm going to leave that, yes.
All right, you're locking that in?
I am locking that in.
That is incorrect.
Damn it.
Fiona Shaw was the Prime Minister in Adam Sandler's Pixels. Ralph Fiennes was Professor James Moriarty in Holmes and Watson. And Jim Broadbent was Madam Gasket in Robots.
Okay.
I'll give you 1 point for one of these people. I have a fourth option here. It's going to be one of them. I'll give you a point if you get this one right. But this is like a no scope. It's just one. You have to guess who it was. Who was the Prime Minister in The Legend of Tarzan? 2016.
The movie we watched?
Yeah, the movie we watched. 2016.
One of these people is.
Yes, right? It's one of these three.
I think it is Jim Broadbent.
That's correct.
Yeah. Like, I remember him.
I being almost was a dick. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I remember him because I think that was the movie we watched that he had, like, that haircut with the mutton chops.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure
yeah.
he has, like, he, and I made a comment about it, and I'm like, oh, there's Jim Broadbent doing the same Jim Broadbent character, or like the, or have, I was, I said something to the point of, there's Jim Broadbent with the perfect facial hair for his just motif of characters.
Well, if you're curious as to Madison's exact words, be sure to check out Legend of Tarzan 2, Fall of Tarzan. Tarzan dies in this one.
If that's when I made that joke.
It was either that or Moulin Touche, which is the only other Jim Broadbent movie we've done where he would have had sideburns like that or mutton chops. I was yeah. almost mean and had the Prime Minister in Pixels, Professor James Moriarty, and the Prime Minister in Legend of Tarzan, which was two very not gendered roles. I decided to go with Madame yep. Gasket for the fake out of maybe you'd pick Fiona Shaw, because that's the only like specifically female character. But
yeah, it almost got me. But then I remember, I remember out of the three of those movies, which I have. Actually, I've only seen Robots, so that was my only like tether, and I'm like, but then I remember Madame Gasket is the enemy in that, and it is clearly a person doing like a like, oh my god, kind of voice.
We're gonna do Holmes and Watson maybe here in the fourth era. I'll make you watch this Adam Sandler Holmes movie, not Adam Sandler, Will Ferrell Holmes movie.
Yeah. Okay. Then I'm gonna make you watch Pixels.
It grows on you weirdly, Holmes and Watson, I think, but it's not good. I'm not saying you like it gets better the more you watch it. I'm saying I tend to enjoy it the more times I end up watching it. Anyway, I don't have to explain myself to you.
You don't. And I heard tell that due to nothing besides because the quest for to end the Inverse Wizard's curse is taking a long time and is making the running of the carnival just impossible, and not because we're on a strict time restraint today and I didn't have enough time to create a game where there's no game today. There's no carnival of bits today, so sorry. For all of you that just tune in for the carnival of bits and not the actual show,
who
I
are
apologize.
You? Stop Feel listening free. To our podcast.
Yeah. You know.
You need help. Find medical help immediately.
Yeah, I apologize, but you know, some days are better than others, and this day there's no carnival. Put that on a t-shirt.
This day there's no carnival.
Some days are better than others, and this day there's no carnival.
Well, once we eventually make a merch store, because I do want to have a shirt. I can't remember what the episode's from, but we did come with You've Got a Bad Butt, Nazi Scum was a shirt that we had come up with as well. Mm-hmm. So we'll start making shirts at some point.
I think I enjoy Hollandaise in the PM was the shirt.
Okay. I don't think I've ever heard that sentence before in my life. But as far as what we need to accomplish today, do you have any ideas for this?
Not like I really liked that Sean Connery's character. I really liked how he got like electrocuted, like spoiler that he gets like electrocuted to hell at the very end. And I like the idea of maybe he gets like he's still alive somehow. Mm-hmm. And he like becomes like a Magneto or Doctor Doom sort of character, and becomes like basically their Moriarty.
Gotcha. Sir August de Winter.
August de Winter. That was kind of like my idea that like he like starts a like sort of like evil organization of weather related incidents or something, or like they like he makes a tsunami or something, but I don't know. But or he's just trying to take over the world another way, and he has these like electric powers. I don't know. Do you have an idea?
I have a really stupid idea that I just thought of that I don't want to do, but I'm going to put it on tape. We set a movie 50 years in the future or thereabouts, and from the shadows, Sir August de Winter gets in contact with a younger Stanley Tucci from the Corps and helps him build Destiny, the weapon that they made to stop the Corps. So he's in charge. He's responsible for the Corps. I'm not actually suggesting we do that movie. I'm just saying.
Well, if he's alive in this movie, then maybe that happens. But I don't. I think you just made the whole movie right there in that sentence. Yep.
All right. Well, if we did it, that's credits on another episode of The Equalizers. Easy. Go ahead.
Oh, no.
Did you sort of spell easy?
Like, I said easy peasy.
I wrote down some random ideas. This was one where it didn't lend itself to, like, here's an idea for a sequel. And also, any sequel we would do would just be, like, a brand new adventure leaping off point. So I just wrote down time travel, question mark. And then Gentleman's Club. And then I admitted that to Gentleman's Fight Club. Something about insects. Space. I don't know. I was just kind of writing down vibes and genres at this point just to see if anything like stuck out. But
insects. I don't know. Like, because I do like the idea of like a wacky spy adventure with like ridiculous science. Mm-hmm. So we could come up with a premise, and you just said insects. So like, what if like someone is trying to take over the world by controlling insects or bees or something like that, and is basically there's a bee or ant based villain using they are a chemical. A chemist or something who has tapped into like the chemical trails and structures and like processes that ants use, and to find their way, and also to hive mind, right? To get like build shit or like build fortresses or something, or he grows ants up to like 100 the size or something like that.
So I have an idea myself that, because I think there needs to be not a twist in the middle, but a sort of like with somewhat this movie and a lot of the James Bond movies, where at the halfway point it essentially becomes a different movie, like a Casino Royale. The first half he's trying to find this bomb, the second half is a poker game. So what if the opening of the movie is all this machinery and equipment and like science stuff is going missing? We can comment on stuff like how the bees are also missing, or the bees aren't quite out in force this year, I say, old bean what. And it turns out that whoever is in charge is controlling them and using insects to steal this equipment. They're building a device so that they will become like the queen bee of Earth, and everyone will follow them, all like the brain chemistry of bees or ants who follow and work for like a queen with a hive mind.
I like that.
My other thing I want to do is the villain for a while is a man, but there's like a female assistant or niece or daughter or something who kills him, and then she's the villain because ants don't follow a king. They follow a queen or something like that, which I think would be perfect. Maybe at the halfway point, that's what she does. Like, he's like, I'm going to build this contraption and I'm going to do it for this. And she's like, no, I'm going to use it for this because I'm the queen.
I think it was on a podcast I heard recently where they were talking about, maybe it was Say Riddle Riddle, that they just briefly mentioned it, like royal jelly, and how the twist could, like, how what bees do is they have to make enough royal jelly to feed the queen or sustain the queen. And if they don't, they just, or if they know they're not going to be able to do it, they just let that queen die or something like that. So, like, what if this person who is, maybe they start with bees and they are an insect based like villain, but they're trying to upgrade their science to control others as well, like, you know, and like to do the same thing through kind of like the same practice, and the they're trying to like have him them bring something. Like he tricks humans or he tricks bees into thinking that his royal jelly is like money or like diamonds or goods or like or technology. And so that the bees go and harvest that shit and bring it to him.
Okay.
And then the twist is at the end is like somehow like, Steed is his name.
Yeah.
Like Steed and
Mrs. Peel.
Stephen Peel. Steed and Peel.
That's fine.
That Steed and Peel somehow like just try to capture all that stuff and then the bees just let them die or something like that, you know? It's like the bees like give up on this because they can't find enough of it. Like, okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I have an idea. Like, so I like the idea of them being kind of brought on to this mission because it's just something weird's going on. So it's not that stuff is going missing. People are calling in like this science lab or whatever, this like computer store, whatever. Place that where they would like sell something that this guy, the scientist needs, is like, hey, so it's a weird thing. Like a bunch of circuitry's gone and we found these in the cash register and it's like vials of honey. And it's because the guy's using that whatever mind trickery that controls the bees to convince people that that's money. So he's like paying with honey. The idea of like,
no.
And I don't know. I just think that's a neat way for them to come on to the case of like, what the fuck's happening? Who's using like hypnosis to pay for technology with honey? And then they're going through, maybe because of that, he's like the scientist that's doing this isn't like malicious. He has some idea, but nobody will fund him. So he's like doing this under the table, stealing the parts he needs to prove he's right. And his like daughter or assistant or whatever is like kills him and starts to use it for nefarious purposes. Maybe she doesn't realize he's been sending, like giving away so much of this royal jelly. So at the end, it's like, oh no, the reserves are gone, or they blow up the reserves or something as part of an action scene.
Yeah.
And then the bees just like let her die.
Okay. I like that. So what if like the idea is like, there's like the whole, like maybe we open up as like, oh, there's a huge energy, like there's like a huge energy crisis or something at the very beginning of the movie. And it's like, oh, if only we had enough resources or we had enough people to like mine these resources or like, but nobody wants those jobs or so for some reason, or nobody wants to do that. Because there's like a story, it's just like, there's an energy crisis and people want to like go out and like roller skate and go to the movies instead of work hard and like help our nation thrive. And so like this person is just like, individualism is like destroying the world or whatever. So like, I'm going to take control of their minds and like work them for 10 years. So we have enough resources to like survive, you know, it's like the Thanos thing of just like, oh, this is how we solve the problem. It's a brutal, horrible way, but it solves the problem kind of thing.
One brutal, horrible gesture nips the problem in the bud instead of sustained hard work.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So like maybe that's like that person's goal or like something like that. Or it doesn't have to be an energy crisis or like that thing particularly, or like, or maybe it's just like there's a war or something. And
sure.
Like, just like nobody wants to sign up or anything, you know, and like maybe that person is like an ex like soldier or something. Like
I could see if we're going with the idea that the main scientist gets killed at the halfway point and the real kind of villainous character takes over from there. First guy's point could just be, we can use this to harness bees to do jobs that are too dangerous for people, like building skyscrapers. Mm-hmm. These bees can fly high enough and carry these beams, you know, like 10,000 bees can carry the steel beam. We don't need to send guys up in like rickety elevator shafts and stuff like that. It might fall to their deaths. Like, we can do this with bees. And like, it's like a more altruistic way. And then the assistants like, why are you focusing on building buildings when we're going to run out of energy in 10 years or whatever? Like the idea of like their vision is far more this global problem that can be solved with it. But he's like fucking around with buildings and stuff or mine shafts or whatever. Like,
yeah, he sees it as like a very like just like the next evolution of like building and like mm-hmm. making things. I think maybe we see at the beginning like him like pitching it to like some world leaders or something, or like imagine you could build a bridge in like a 72th of the time with these bees because they move so fast and like so and they can if they can build a hive, something as complex as a hive, then they can build like structures, mm-hmm. you know. And I don't know, do we want it just to be bees or do we want it to be ants? Because like I could see it also being that.
Let's start with bees as like this is the trial run, but there's like either a plan for ants or a prototype. So when they do like the final assault on the villain's mm-hmm. base, it's like a surprise, it's also ants or whatever. Like,
yeah,
I know,
it's like stink bugs.
Yeah, I agree with you. It doesn't have to just be bees. I think for the at least the first half it's bees, and then the idea is like, oh no, they were a lot farther along than we thought they were on this, or like well, he was doing that, I was piggybacking his research to also control ants or whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's me, Michael Douglas. He was an Ant-Man.
Yeah. Oh,
he was the original. Ant-Man.
I was like, was he in Ants with the movie with a Z? And I'm like, that was there was Woody Allen, there was Sylvester Stallone, Jennifer Lopez. I don't remember.
I think I saw Ants once a long time ago, and I don't remember Sylvester Stallone being in the movie. I believe you. That was more of just the culture shock. Wow,
he's the muscly soldier ant.
Of course he is.
Falls in love with Jennifer Lopez ant.
You mean they didn't cast him as the reedy dweeb ant?
No, that was Woody Allen.
Hey, yo, I just love reading ant books. Please don't beat me up.
No, the plot of Ants was that the Woody Allen ant was a worker and was bored and wasn't thrilled with life, while the Sylvester Stallone ant was a soldier ant who was... and the whole movie was about, like, oh, everybody has their place and everything. Nobody should dream for anything bigger. Mm-hmm. And then Woody Allen ant pretends to be Sylvester Stallone ant and almost dies in a horrific, brutal war scene where all of the ants die, basically. And it's supposedly, like, supposed to be a kid's movie.
We have about a minute and a half left. Do you want to start a new call?
No, I want to talk about ants for like
the movie's next over, gang.
5 minutes. Do you have any questions about ants?
No. All right. Well, I haven't started our time because we got wrapped up in talking about that. I can go ahead and start our time and we can flesh out a little bit here.
And
get some details down. So let me ask this. Do we want to use, because I know I threw it out there, but it seems like maybe it doesn't jive with the rest of the movie. Do you want to use the thing where the original scientist who's trying to do an altruism thing is like actually paying with royal honey or something, and that's how Peel and Steed get on the case? Or is it just the missing machinery is enough to like get them on the scene?
I like the idea of like maybe like, I don't know if like paying for royal honey, I think like this scientist mm-hmm. who maybe like, I think there's a scene at the very beginning of the movie where the scientist is pitching this whole idea to the world mm-hmm. or to like a bunch of world leaders or a bunch of like corporations, and basically they're like, no, this is the one, it's just like eliminating workforce, and also think about the unions and like, you know, who are mm-hmm. just going to like sue us into oblivion, getting rid of their jobs and replacing them with the bees, and they call them like a quack or whatever. Then there's like months later or something, and all these like things start getting stolen, like from these different like facilities, or like and that's how Mother gets roped in on it or whatever, and it like the police and authorities can't figure out, but like these things just are suddenly gone for some reason. Mm-hmm. But honey, like, just like the only thing that is remains in there is like nothing but like just like a pool of honey for some reason, mm-hmm. Which comes from the bees.
I think that tracks.
Yeah. I don't think it's like that they pay with honey.
Yeah, it was an idea. It didn't work. It was a fun idea that didn't really pan out in my brain. Like, it sounded like good until I tried to say it out loud, and then it just sounded like, why?
Yeah, like, I like the idea, like, there's just, like, a bunch of news stories about, like, I think maybe the bees even steal money, right? Like, and, like, people open their cash drawers, and there's just, like, full of honey. It's just like, what the hell? Like, what is going on? And there's clearly some, like shenanigans afoot, and that's how Steed and Lake?
Peel.
That's how Steed and Peel get roped in, and they have to investigate. And that's when they find out that, like, oh, this guy is just trying to fund his research enough, like, and is stealing all these things to fund his research so it can be good enough, or it can be, like, irrefutable, like, to, like, people have to invest in this, and people have to, like, do it or something like that. Like, if he goes far enough, he will. But his assistant, who is the mastermind villain, who was there at the very beginning, is like, they're never going to, this tech is genius or whatever. They're never going to accept it. You have to make them accept it. Right. You know? And that's when she takes over.
Let's give our characters names real quick.
Yeah.
So the first doctor is Albert Stingleton.
Jesus. Dr. Hive. Dr.
You got to make it a little bit more British. Dr. Hive.
What about Dr. Honeywell?
Dr. Honeywell's pretty good. Yeah, I like that a lot, actually.
Yeah, Dr. Honeywell. I think he's just like this old British.
Yeah, he's just this very affable British man who's taken to stealing because no one will fund his research.
Yeah. And his assistant is British actresses 90s.
Well, you're gonna get actresses who are in their 90s, not from the 90s.
From the 90s, Kate Winslet, Kylie Minogue, Emma Thompson.
Sorry, is this for Honeywell, or are we casting the other person?
This was for. Oh, sorry, that was for Honeywell.
Gotcha.
Sorry, no. That was for the assistant. Sorry.
Gotcha. So the assistant's Honeywell.
No.
Okay, gotcha.
Main I think guy, the doctor Honeywell, okay. And then the assistant, which we got to come up with a name with. Mm-hmm. What about Anthony Hopkins for Dr. Honeywell?
I like it.
And then what's the name of the assistant?
Her name is Patricia, and that's it.
Patricia Stingworth.
The Hivenstein, Hive Alive, Pamela Hive Alarm Chili. If we want to be funny, we could call her Pamela Hivesley because Pamela Isley is Poison Ivy's name.
Oh, that's pretty fun. And Pamela Isley is a doctor.
And Poison Ivy was played by Uma Thurman in the George Clooney movie.
Yep. Let's do it.
Okay, Pamela Hivesley.
Pamela Hivesley.
So the first part of the movie, they're trying to hunt down what's happening with the tech. We'll come up with a couple action scene adventures here, but essentially they find Honeywell's hideout, and they find the tech. They find out what he's doing, that he's stealing this money to fund his research. And they're like, are they going to catch him maybe? Or is it like, oh my God, these two intruders are here and they're getting through all of security. What are we going to do? And that's when Hively kills him and is like, they don't follow you because bees only follow a queen. And then
how about Anna Friel plays Hivesley?
What would I know her from?
Pushing Daisies.
But what would I know
she's
her
Chuck.
From?
She's Chuck from... You haven't seen Pushing Daisies?
No.
Mike, you would live for the Emerson Codd character. Emerson Codd is everything you want. Well, and everything...
I mean, I believe you, but that doesn't help me now.
Timeline. She's Limitless. I've seen Timeline.
I mean, I see her picture here now, so that's at least something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. I'm fine with this.
So I think we need to talk about how Steed and Peele get involved at first. Like, at first, they're just, like, investigating these... Maybe his doctor friend or the doctor who is part of Mother or whatever. I don't know. Like, the invisible guy? Like, or he is invisible, right? Like,
yes. Played by Patrick McNee, who was the original Jonathan Steed.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. That's funny. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's the one who, like, maybe he attended this, like, summit of, like, this, like, new technology, and he saw this guy, and he's just like, you know, like, I just have a feeling it's bees. I just have a feeling, like, or something, like, I just have a feeling it's bees, or, like, there's something, or, like, or maybe he's like, who's the most, like, he knows that Anthony Hopkins' character Honeywell is the top scientist who knows about bees. Like, he's the best, like, biologist or whatever ever. And, like, he's like, oh, that's a lead. That's someone who you should talk to, Steed, to find out some answers and, like, to find out some clues. And, like, while they're investigating him and, like, talking to him, he realizes that, like, oh, you're the guy, right? You know, it's like, you're the one doing this through somehow. Like, I don't know what the clues are. Like, yeah. Like, I think that's, like, how it starts, at least. That's how they start, like, becoming involved with him.
Sure.
And then they realize that it is actually Honeywell who's doing this. And now, they at one point track him to his lair or whatever. And is just like, they need to go in, like, reconnaissance and, like, get some evidence that it's actually happening before they, like, sick all of Mother on, I say Mother, like,
it's, I know what,
like,
you mean.
Or an organization, yeah. But, like, I don't know what the name of the organization
is. I mean, we'll just say, like, the organization.
Yeah. Sick all Mother. So they go in and they like, while they're in there, they fight a bunch of, like, fucking bees and shit. And, they get attacked and, like, stung and, like, captured or something, and that's when, like, they get so stung, they get so full of venom or whatever, and, like, maybe they're, like, a new breed of bee that, like, their venom doesn't, like, just, like, sting and, like, give you a little bump. It's like, it knocks you out.
Sure.
Or if we want to do other bugs, it could be like, oh, there's a stink bug, and then, like, it actually, like, makes them go to sleep or something like that.
I think for this first encounter, it's just bees. And then, because the idea being, like, okay, now we know exactly what we're fighting and how to stop it. So then we come in with, like, our clothes are reinforced to prevent bee stings or whatever. And it's like, oh, cool. There's also ants and stink bugs and millipede, like, whatever. Like, there's all these other bugs that we can use. Like, I figured out how to do it. That way then there's, like, we give them a natural progression of, like, we learned from that first fight and we're ready for the second fight. And the second fight is like, oh, cool. I've also upped the ante.
This is awesome because they become, they start thinking like spiders do, who learn after, like, encounters and stuff like that, like, who, and are a natural predator to a lot of bugs. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Ray finds, makes himself a new Jonathan Steed costume as the Spider-Man.
Yes.
The Spider Steed.
The Spider Steed.
Cool. So then in the second half, Hivesley has taken all the technology and stuff and moved to a second other secret location. And now they have to hunt her down. This is where I think she started her plan. So maybe she started to also, like, use the machine on people. So there are now, like, henchmen as well as bugs at the base. So they have to fight not just swarms of bugs, but also human beings. who are under her mind control. She also has to have, maybe they find out through like the notes from Honeywell or whatever about the royal honey thing. And they know that they, if they take out her supply, they seriously kneecap her ability to continue with this plan.
Maybe there's like a whole element to it too. Is like, because she's mind controlling people, like it's like those people are just like, oh, we can't kill them. They're right. like not in control of their bodies, right? Mm-hmm. They're not even in control of their minds. They're being taken over by Hivesley. And so they have to like eloquently, like it's like imagine they're like fighting on like a high up platform and they keep like hitting the person and then like they almost go over and he like grabs them and like throws them back. Yeah. But then because they're back, they're going to start fighting again. Like an elaborate like scene like that of them like flipping around and like say like fighting people and saving people at the same time.
Sure.
Because they're like hurting them. But they're trying not to hurt them too bad. Cause maybe like some of them are like agents of Mother, or like maybe there was like a team sure. that went in initially and like went missing and now they have to fight like some of the people that they know.
I like that. Do we need like, cause I mean, at this point they blow up the dam or whatever, they blow up the reserve and she's defeated because there's no more honey. So she ends up dying and the bees let her die. And maybe that's a thing during some of the fight, like the first fight where they go to take down Honeywell, but it turns out he's already killed. Steed tries to fight her, or Emma Peel tries to fight her, and like the bees like heal her a little bit. Like that's a little bit like stupid. That's not how that works. But the bees like heal her a little bit during the fight. So the idea is like, well, she's not invulnerable, but it's going to take a lot for us to be able to actually bring her down. And so,
yeah, I mean, she's using some sort of chemical biology to communicate with the different like hives of bees. Mm-hmm. And like maybe they're bringing her not like magic potion, but like adrenaline or something sure. like that. Like maybe like she bred some bees that like instead of venom, they have adrenaline in them. And then when they sting her, she like gets like just like juiced and like completely like able to, and like maybe like steroids or something like that.
Sure, that
like,
works.
This sounds horrifying.
Yeah, I know.
Like the idea of like breeding special bees that instead of venom, they have like fucking like just limitless juice in them or something. Or like what if you, or like there's some that have Kool-Aid in it and she like just like they just squirt it into her mouth.
There's a hive for just the steroid beads and she walks up and starts shaking it over her head so that they all fall out and sting her. And then Appeal just looks at her and goes, not the whole thing.
Not the whole thing. I knew you were going to go that way. No. Not the whole thing.
Anyway. Everybody should watch League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we're sort of petering out at the end, but this is the kind of franchise and movie where it's just like, and then they fight for a little bit. And like, we can come with some cool angles for the fights, but once we hit kind of the plot points and the beats, there's really nothing else other than, and then they fight for a little bit.
I like the, like, maybe we should give her more motivation to put more of a button on it. Like, cause it's just like, oh yeah, she wants to take over people's minds, but why or whatever. Like,
oh, you hit
she's
it.
She's trying, maybe she's trying to like create like a crime syndicate or something. And like,
I think you hit on the head that she's like concerned about an energy crisis or something. And the idea of like, we can do it. We just all have to, like, we need a single focus for 10 years and then the problem is solved like forever. Like, I have a plan. If we do this plan like the way I have it right now, it's like, okay, but like millions of people are going to die from being overworked in that amount of time. And she's like, okay, yeah, but how, like, we'll be energy sufficient forever, like clean, safe energy. We won't need to worry about radiation, like nuclear plants, whatever. We'll have clean, safe energy for the rest of our lives. And like, I don't know, I like the idea that you had of like, she has the vision of one brutal action being what's necessary for sustained peace or whatever. Like, in her mind, this is the way we solve everything. And that's why she's like, he was going to build like skyscrapers. He was going to build another building for fucking oil executives to run their companies out of. Like, you know, he's gonna build homes for people, it's whatever, but the idea of like also like this technology be used to like to eventually his technology would have been used for corporate greed. I'm going to use it to ensure we don't have to rely on corporate greed anymore. Yes, millions of people are going to die from exhaustion and overwork, but ultimately, how many more won't work to death because of the solution that's been done? Like, I don't know. I think that you hit it on the head immediately at the beginning before we started the time with that being her motivation. I think that rules. Like, August de Winter was just a little bit unhinged and was blackmailing the world. I like her idea of more being more, in her mind, altruistic, but also equally fucked up.
And we also had like the secret, like last hour villain reveal with her.
Exactly, like the halfway point,
like in Rise of Cobra, the G.I. Joe movie.
Well, spoiler.
Sorry, it is a pretty big spoiler. Like that's a pretty that, like if you really care about that movie that came out like 15 years ago, spoiler: Joseph Gordon-Levitt is Cobra.
But I think, I don't know, I think we kind of did it. We can go through. We got a few minutes left if we want to go through, and we got like 10 minutes left if we want to do some of the action scenes. Like they do a fight on a burning boat or whatever. Like
just being locked into like a high, like a glass box with a bunch of bees, like is like sounds pretty brutal or whatever. Maybe there's like a scene where they are captured and the bees like sting them with like truth serum. Okay. And they they tell them all like the secrets of mother or whatever. And so because her whole thing is just not only like destroying but like learning. Sure. Like too, and like the knowledge of mother's secrets is really valuable, so they'd be a wasted. Like they're going to be way more useful in her thrall than dead.
There's a scene where Emma Peel's having to fight Hivesley to buy time while Steed has to eat 1,000 gallons of royal jelly.
Yes,
that's how they destroy it. They can't destroy it. He has to eat all of it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. How do they destroy it? Because like that's what we should decide. Maybe like during like, because I don't think he actually eats it. But like maybe like draining it into like the ocean or something, or like or burning it. Or
I was thinking like, about burning it. Like maybe we have somebody announce, oh, it's highly flammable. It's like she's tampered with the formula, highly flammable. And then we can get away with.
He just has a flamethrower, and that's how he's fighting most of the bees. He just like you see like
God.
I think maybe there's like a whole thing where he is fucking afraid of bees too. Like and like this is like his like
sure
like this is his vengeance arc or whatever. Like throughout the entire movie, he's just like, oh God, no more bees. Like, I hate this.
Not bees.
Like. And then, but at the very end, he has a flamethrower and he's like, ah, ha, 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 and you see just like little balls of fire, like
God
there. Jesus.
I think that works. That's fine.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I think we did it kind of
sure.
Like, so he burns the royal jelly, makes it like unpalatable anymore, and like the bees give up and like just let her die or whatever. Mm-hmm. Take her power away, because she herself wouldn't actually die.
No. Right? Yeah, that's like, what I mean, like I think in this case we're being metaphorical about she dies.
Yeah.
Like they let her die. I mean the alternate answer I guess is she falls in and drowns in the royal jelly.
Okay.
And I mean, I don't want to take away your Ralph Fiennes with the flamethrower. Anyway, he can still do that regardless.
Maybe it's becoming like, maybe what they do is they try to like set it on fire or like just blow up a reactor or whatever. And it becomes like molten, like jelly. Like
that's
so
funny.
It like loses its, and then like they're fighting over like a pit of the molten jelly that is like spewing everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, I think maybe she's keeping it in vats to like sustain like the control. Mm-hmm. And then that's during this, like, while Hivesley and
Peel
are fighting, he is like lighting it on fire, putting like incendiary bombs in it or something, and just releasing it. And so it's like leaking into the factory that they're in. You know what? It's also, you know what it is? Mm-hmm. It's a blimp. It's a huge fucking blimp, because that's a cool villain vehicle.
So. As she sinks into the vat of molten royal jelly, she does like stick a hand up, and then slowly the hand forms into a thumbs up.
A thumbs up. Yeah. It's actually like a shocker.
Anyway, did we do it?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what do we call it before we wrap?
We call it Man versus Bee, that Rowan Atkinson movie that's coming out.
Age of Bugtron.
Avengers 2, Bee movie.
That's the placeholder for now.
This time it's bees. What about like something like really spy, like spy serial? It's like the Avengers, the hive of antiquity or something, or like the hive of,
let's see, Honeyfinger
or hive mind.
Hive mind's not bad. Live and Let Die. Then
Be and Let Die.
The Spy Who Loved Me.
Then the Bee Who Loved Me.
The Man with the Golden Gun.
The Man with a Bee Gun.
Moonraker. Bee Raker.
Bee Raker.
That's pretty good. Bee Raker. Octopussy.
Bee Pussy.
I'm not going to lie. I really want to, though. We can't, but I want to so bee bad. Pussy? Yeah.
Honey is Forever.
Honey is Forever is not bad. I mean, we can't call it Bee Pussy, right?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I said it into existence. Though. I know. It's funny.
It's one of those where if you agree it's a bad idea, we can't do it. Like if I say it you're like, no, I bet we could. I usually let that convince me, but even if you think it's a bad idea. Man, it turns out there's not that many bee puns in there. Live and Let Hive.
It's No Time to Live, right?
Yeah. It's No Time to Die is the new one.
Oh, No Time to Die. No Time to Hive is pretty fun.
On Her Majesty's Bee Crit Service.
I like No Time to Hive.
All right. Avengers 2, No Time to Hive.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Did we do it?
We did it.
If we did it, that's credits on another episode of The Equalizers. Madison Jones, tell the people where they can find us.
People can find us on Podbean, Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, and everywhere else podcasts are found by searching The Equalizers, including in that last dreg of honey that you have in your cabinet. If you pour that out, cook some white bread. When I say cook, I mean toast some white bread. And you take a knife and you get that honey out, put it in the microwave if you need to loosen it up a little bit. Take that honey out, spread it over that piece of toast, and then slam that toast on a plate and drag it. And in the drag of honey that's on the plate now, it'll spell, listen to The Equalizers.
You can also get in contact with us on Facebook and Twitter at The Equalizers. Our Gmail is equalizers@gmail.com. We have an Instagram. It is the_equalizers. And as always, we spell that EQUELIZERS like in sequel.
Like in Bequel.
Like in Bequel. There you go. Special thanks to the Banana Boys for their theme song, Two Steps Strutting, off their debut album, Technicolor Girl from Outer Space. You can find them online by searching The Banana Boys. And as always, they spell that BOYES like in. Oh, yes. I was waiting to see if you had something. Their full album is available on all streaming services now. Madison, next time.
It's time.
It's time once again. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
It's Avengers season.
It's Avengers 3. And Madison, as
What will Don Knotts bring us?
Well, as we're recording this, you know what Don Knotts has brought us, because we have actually already recorded Avengers 3. Do you have any non-spoiler thoughts to share with the people?
It's been a long road without you, my friend. I'll come and see when we Avengers again. And then you and me are in a car, and then I drive off one way, and then you drive off
another. Gotcha. Family.
Do you know?
Tune in next time for Avengers 3, Canada Strikes Back.
We're bringing the family back together for
Canada Strikes Back. So, for the Equalizers,
I'm Madison B. Jones.
I'm Mike Buzz Knoll. To be continued.
First take your favorite leg, and then you kick it up to your chest. Then you pump your open palms, and then you really start breaking a sweat. That's all there is, that's really it. You barely even gotta move your butt. Come on, man, now follow my lead, and we'll do the two-step strut. Come on, dance with me.